Hello and welcome to Watch the Throne. What a lovely day. This is episode 8, Mighty Joe Young from 1998. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski. And this is a movie I can almost guarantee I have seen in theaters and that I sort of know everything that happens in it, but didn't remember if I'd actually seen it or not. So we will get into that. I feel like a lot of movies we're recording lately, Mike. I'm like, hey, I've seen this, I think, and I remember zero about it or I remember the bones of it. I forget things so quickly, it is startling. Also, this is 20 years old, so I mean, I can't really blame myself.
Yeah, well, for me, what's cool about the Charlize stuff that we're doing is I remember, these are all coming out when I was in high school, so I remember all of this stuff when it was released and everything. It's just I didn't see a lot. I didn't see Devil's Advocate in theaters. I didn't see this in theaters and stuff, but I was aware of this movie for sure and thought it looked cool.
Huh.
But this is the first time I've ever watched it.
Well, with us today, we have someone who loves this movie, who told us before we started recording, this movie makes him cry. We had his podcasting partner on the show last week on our celebrity episode. We have the second head of the two-headed beast of P.S. I Love Hoffman finally correcting our glaring omission on not having either of these guys on either of our previous podcasts. Kyle Reinfried. Hello, Kyle.
Hey, what's happening, guys? Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. So there were two movies when we announced that we did Charlize that you really wanted.
Yes.
We've already done one, which was That Thing You Do.
Yes.
And this one. So what about this movie? Yeah. What about this movie do you love? What about this movie do you love?
All right. So first off, I mean, it's a Disney movie. I'm a Disney guy. When I was younger, there was very few jobs I ever wanted in my life. One of them was to be a Disney animator, a Disney voice artist. The point being, I've just always loved Disney. And also just growing up in the 90s, we're talking that was what I think was a great age for Disney live action movies. And I think this one is, I'm by no means am I saying this is a perfect movie. I also, again, I break things up into movies and films. This is just, I think, a very enjoyable, face value kind of movie. And for me, as far as it making me cry, anything Disney just always, from its animated to its live action, they love killing off mothers. And it's just and that just gets me. And the little lullaby that she sings to Joe, and oh my god, it's just I love animals. I always grew up with big dogs. I'm just what's the next best thing? A big gorilla. I don't know. It's just it tugs on my heart, this movie.
Yeah, I can see that, man. I mean Disney is propaganda,
you know,
so they absolutely know how to craft a film to tug at your heartstrings when it needs to. So,
and I will also say the music in this movie is amazing, and it's the composer the late great James Horner, who has composed some of my favorite soundtracks to some of my favorite movies, just from Legends of the Fall and American Tale and Field of Dreams, The Rocketeer, Jumanji. It's just Braveheart, come on. These movies have amazing soundtracks, and this movie, I think it's the music that really pulls me into emotionally.
You're making a strong case.
Yeah. And on top of that, a pretty decent, pretty decent cast between the late great Bill Paxton and your lead lady, Charlize.
I wish I liked this movie more. I feel like I've just seen this before. I might have actually literally seen
it
before.
Well, it's a remake. It's a remix, yeah.
But I definitely have not seen the 40s version, I can tell you that much. But I feel like between Godzilla movies and King Kong movies and Jurassic Park and just sort of other gorilla movies, I feel like I've seen this before.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I think Charlize is good in this. But other than that, it just feels like every beat is something that we've seen before. And it's not different enough for me to be I don't think this is bad. In no stretch of my imagination do I think this is a bad movie. I think this is a fine movie. I think it's an enjoyable movie. I think for a movie that's almost 2 hours long, which surprised me, I think it flies by. Mm-hmm. I just didn't like it more than I did, just because I felt like it's all stuff that I've seen before in other things, not necessarily done better, but just there's nothing about this movie that really stood out. I said, Charlize is good, like you said before, when she sings a lullaby and she cries over her what she thinks is the dead Joe Young at the end, and she's good in this movie. Just that, beyond that, nothing about this really pushed any buttons for me.
I wonder if you would like the original one more because of just the time it was made, it's stop motion, black and white. It's a whole different type of filmmaking altogether, a whole different tone to it. But I think one of the issues here, and it hit me early on too, that I wasn't expecting, was this is a family film for kids to watch, you know? Like, this isn't geared toward us. Yeah. I call it King Kong Light. You know, it's like the light beer of kaiju films. and like, that's what drew me to Mighty Joe Young initially, is like, you know, I was going through like all the Kong films and Godzilla movies, and I had never seen this, so I purchased it, but then I never watched it, and then intended to when Bill Paxton passed, and still hadn't gotten around to it. But I ran into that wall early on, but I got over it really quickly for some reason. Maybe just because what worked best for me was they never hid Joe. Like, I thought we weren't going to see him for a long time, and it's like, wham! He's really like one of the main characters in the movie, and we see him a lot, and I really just think the effects work really well also, you know, in a post-Jurassic Park age.
Yeah, Joey said in the beginning it's a movie that's just about 20 years old, and I mean, you know, like, I think it holds up pretty well as far as its effects. It's a combination of CGI, and then it's like the same suits that they used. I think I read something, like, when I was reading the trivia on it, that it's the same guy that did, like, the gorilla suit for, like, movies like Baby Days Out, and I think even another movie, and, like...
Oh, yeah, the guy who, like, kept vowing over and over again, I will never do another monkey movie.
Yeah, exactly.
He just kept doing monkey movies.
But he kept doing it, and, I mean, so it's just, like, a good combination of, I mean, even, like, pretty realistic-looking suits. I don't know, I've been to a couple of zoos and seen some gorillas. It does the trick.
I think the CGI is pretty good, although there was one shot at the very end of the movie... I don't know if either of you guys caught this.
Like, at the gate of the new...
When they open the Joe Young National Park.
Yeah.
And he's there. You can see green screen through him.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Yeah,
oh,
that shot.
You can?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's... I was like... Oh, like, I even That's rewound rough. It, because I was like, there's no way that I saw what I thought I saw, because, like, he's standing in front of trees, and, like, I'm like, oh, I must have just seen, like, you know, there were trees around him or something. And you rewind, and it's just like, I don't know how that happens, but it happened. And I was just like, oh, that's
unfortunate. Yeah, especially because that's a shot where he's like standing still. So how do
he's
you
not moving.
So how do you not do, like, I mean, number one, it's not that hard to then like Kodachrome or whatever you call that process, or on top of that, whatever their process was for like the animatronic suit, and then just making it bigger, like on the screen. Like, I don't know why they use that. But then the last shot of him just like running along like the mountainside and stuff like that, that looks good. But yeah, that one shot, I totally agree. It looks...
I was just like, I'm glad you caught it, because I was like, I thought I was kind of going crazy. I was like, there's no way that in this movie that cost $90 million that like one intern wasn't like, guys, can we fix that? And then he was fired, but then they fixed it. You know what I mean? Like, how did nobody see that?
Yeah, it's one of those. It's the ninth greatest mystery of the world.
You know, Mike, what I was really pleasantly surprised about is something that we always looked for in Cage movies. I don't know if we got really in Keanu movies. Maybe, I mean, Young Again, but that's sort of the whole point of the movie. But like, we get a young Charlize pretty early on right there.
Good call. Right. We have that sort of preface of her with her mother and everything. And yeah, that's right. And then the poachers come and...
Oh my God, I'm going to start crying again.
It's the Bambi moment. It's the... I mean, yeah. It's why her and Joe have like a kinship, because they're two orphans that raised with each other in the jungle together.
Mothers died on the same day.
Shush.
It reminded me of that movie, was it Gorillas in the Mist, where is it Sigourney Weaver goes and
lives
with,
Monkey
like,
Club.
The, goes out and lives with the apes. I just got the feel that this was, you know, on top of everything else, it was a message film about preservation and, you know, endangered species and, you know, the proper etiquette and when dealing with zoos, which, you know, zoos are just like, oh man, that's a tough subject. But, you know, it's, they do their best to say there's an issue here, right, with like the poaching and all that kind of stuff, as well as keep it light, friendly, and family entertainment.
And they have an amazing bad guy death in it. Okay, I'm gonna put that out there for like
movie. So at the end of the movie, when Joe is at the, we're talking about at the amusement park, right? Where and so Charlize is basically facing down this bad guy who had killed her mother, had killed Joe's mother. Joe like comes out of nowhere, like rips the guy up into the air, and I was like, "Oh man, if this wasn't a Disney movie, I would love to see his like arm rip off."
Yeah.
And I was like, "But you know, it's a PG movie, it's a Disney movie, we're never gonna get that." And then he flings him, and the guy falls onto like a transformer and gets electrocuted. And I was like, "Whoa! Like, where did that come from?"
Yeah, I mean, the shot of Joe—it's like by like a funhouse, so there's some mirrors. But it's just like, it is CGI Joe at that point, but it's like there's fire around and just the anger in his eyes. And all of a sudden he comes up behind him and just snags him up. And first he throws him on the wires and he's holding onto the wire. And then just like that, the glove, the index monkey chewed off my thumb and my trigger finger, you know, like that total thing. All we see left is that thing dangling there. That's fantastic.
There's like two or three things that really, for me, help elevate all of that even more. Like, first of all, is sort of his fun-loving rampage through LA, like when he climbs the Chinese Theater everyone's like laughing at him and they're like, go Joe, all right,
I
like you're the man. And then he has like so they're painting Joe as sort of like, yay, we accept him, he's harmless, like he's a gentle giant. And then there's like this murder scene, and what else is crazy is that the cop sees it happen, right? Like the cop like gets out of the car and is like watching it, and then he's like we gotta call like the snipers in. And Charlize is just like standing there like, way to go Joe, like I'm glad we avenged our parents and stuff. Like there's all these little things about it it's quite un-Disney-like.
Yeah, I mean, so this is coming, this the same director as, I mean, two movies that I really like, Tremors and City Slickers, but I mean, as far as Tremors go, that's a cool, you know, monster movie with some cool deaths in it, so I mean, the guy knew how to handle it, I guess, on that forefront.
Yeah, I mean, even early on, like, it's not just that the parents are killed, but that the poacher guy does get fingers bitten off by Joe, right?
Yeah,
it is Joe as a, like a baby, as a baby ape.
Yeah.
So I mean, even that is kind of going in a little further than usual. I wonder if it's because it's live action and not animated, they're like pushing it a little harder, or don't realize that they're pushing it as hard as they would like with animation and being able to get away with that.
I don't know. Also, Joe being adorable as a baby is maybe helping it. Like, oh, you can't be mad at him for like chomping off fingers. Look how cute he is.
Yeah, he did it out of like self-defense. His mom was just shot, and then he chewed off some fingers.
You know, I was getting major visions here between this and the MCU, because every time Charlize called Joe big guy, I was like, oh, it's Black Widow talking to Hulk.
And, like, it is, and there's even a lullaby and everything.
Yeah, that Hulk thing now makes this make a lot more sense to me, I think, and like also why I might have enjoyed it subconsciously. I could have just been thinking like that. That's cool.
You know, when we get to the recasting limit, I'm like, should I put Scarlett in there just because? And I was like, nah, like I can't do it.
Should we have recast Joe? Like
recast Joe as Mark Ruffalo? Yeah, exactly.
Or just as Hulk? You know, just
or
be
just
like
Hulk. But yeah, I mean, like there's that dynamic there of sort of, you know, Beauty and the Beast, kind of, but what otherwise appears to be this, I mean, obviously a very strong, resilient woman in both Black Widow and Jill here, but what appears to be sort of this fragile woman being able to talk this, like, homicidal monster down off the ledge, basically. In both, like, it's just like this beautiful love story. And, like, at the end of the episode, when we talk about what we want to nominate this for, like, this is the first instance of best love story that we're going to nominate for the Golden Wallpapers. I mean, like, the love between Jill and Joe, like, forget about Jill and Bill Paxton. Jill and Joe here, like, have this, like, bond. Like, it's the best love story we've seen so far in a Charlize movie.
The Jill and Greg, it's a little, like, I, you know, even, like, it's like he's 20 years older than her in real life at that point, and it's just, it's a little weird. Her whole, like, I've never been on a date before thing, and just, yeah.
Well, I don't feel like they sold her as Tarzan, you know, but that's who she thinks she's coming across as. It's like, dude, like, there's mirrors in the jungle.
Yeah,
like, come on, girl. Like, give yourself a break. I mean, really, like, I can understand you never wore an evening gown. That's one thing, but to think that you can't pull one off is another, you know?
I feel like the pacing of all this is off. That, like, first of all, the finale sequence is 45 minutes long. Like, it starts an hour 10 into the movie. I'm like, there's no way that this, I'm like, oh, but we're starting here. Like, this is, wait, like the breakout from the zoo is like
preserve,
an hour 10 in. The preserve is like an hour 10 in.
And it turns into a kidnapping.
It turns into a kidnapping, and then turns into a rescue, and then it turns into the
Ferris
wheel
and then a rampage.
Thing. It's crazy.
And another rescue, and then a murder, and then like...
I feel like because that finale is so long, they have to condense everything leading up to that point. The fact that she's like so hesitant of Greg, of Bill Paxton, as soon as he's like, oh, I don't have to get bitten by a bug or bitten by a spider and, like, go through hallucinations. She's like, oh, maybe you're not dumb. And, like, they're best friends. And then they go to America, and they're basically, like, in a relationship. I understand that, like, you need to sort of move things along, especially if you're going to have, like, a 45-minute action sequence. But I agree, Mike, that, like, it's just, like, all of the character development in terms of their relationship and in terms of her, like, her sort of kind of coming of age of, like, going from villager to supermodel in America, basically. Mm-hmm. Oh, we have to do this in 15 minutes because otherwise we have to cut out, you know, big sequences. And, like, that's where 80 of our $90 million went.
Yeah, they're banking off of that cool Bill Paxton researcher from Titanic vibe that he had, like, the year before in 1997. Just like, oh, yeah, he's just a cool guy. And, you know, yeah, he does have, like, a heart of gold, you know. And then you've got the... was it Dr. Banks saying, like, oh, you usually leave right away? It's just like, oh, he's into her too. It's not just superficial.
To me, what it sort of is there for is something that I think the later King Kong movie ran into as an issue a little bit. The Peter Jackson one sort of had, like, some talk about, I feel like they needed her to be romantically linked to a human so that you don't feel like it's just her and the ape. The whole movie.
But, like, why? I don't know why.
Well, because people are stupid. I mean, like, I don't know, because just so, I don't know. I mean, honestly, like, I feel like the movie would work better without any romance whatsoever, and you just make them platonic friends who are honestly just trying to save this, like, exotic creature, you know, for real. Like, they're pooling their resources, they're working together. I mean, they should have really stayed to try and fight off the poachers a little longer, you know. Like, the incident is really cool, but we don't get one where Bill Paxton's kind of, like, on their side fighting and everything. That's the only real threat that's making her look around and go, what are my other options? I only have one. It's this guy who, you know, luckily showed up, you know, yesterday, has a preserve. Like, I could at least take him there, you know, for now, and he won't get hunted. She doesn't really have much of a choice at that part.
Because the romance stuff is, like, so generic and by the book, and like every other movie like this. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, they're sort of thrown into the situation together. If there was anything unique about it, I think it'd be fine, but the fact that it's just, like, it really just functions because it has to be here for whatever reason, like you're saying, Mike. Like, it feels like a waste of time every time they try to develop that at all.
Yeah, you could have more action, you know? Like, you could have more set pieces. Like, maybe it's a money issue, too. Maybe they needed to pad out the script with some quote-unquote dramatic moments or light on the effects. You know, we need other things to do. But it would have been fun to, like, see them go shopping for Joe, right? Like, trying, and, like, you never see what he eats or anything. Like, I would love to see them go and, like, back up a dump truck to a grocery store or something. And, like,
when
just
you said shopping at first, I just imagine him on, like, Rodeo Drive.
Well, even that, like, getting him clothes, I don't know, or, like, training him. Like, we just, like, as you know, for the sake of brevity, we skip all that too. Like, the plot really moves along and tries to refocus on the poaching stuff for the, you know, the message, I guess.
One thing I think is nice about this sort of is that we see Charlize sort of in a return to Africa. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen her in Africa in a movie before, but that's where she grew up, and I think that, I wonder if that's what drew her to the script. Obviously, it's a strong female role, I think. But it's also, hey, you can sort of, if you see where this was shot, I didn't look that up.
I don't know. It looked a little like Jurassic Park to me, so I think it might have been Hawaii at times.
Oh, it looked very much like Jurassic Park.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially, boy, when they're chasing Joe with, like, the Humvees and stuff like that, I was like, oh my god, this is, like, Lost World reminiscent of, like, the cool Humvees, like, chasing down the Pachylephiosauruses and everything.
Yeah, they shot in Hawaii, California, that's it.
So. That makes sense.
Yep. Also shot in Hawaii, also featuring Saeed Jarrah, Lost. So,
yeah.
Mike and I were talking about before that we wish that Saeed Naveen Andrews was in this more. I was like, why didn't we do a recast of him? Because he's in, like, he's one of the main characters in the first, like, 15 minutes of the movie, and then he just disappears from the rest of the movie. So, do love some Saeed.
Yeah, definitely, like, the Saeed's character, and then, how you say his name? The main bad guy, Strasser. He has, like, his right-hand man. Like, they could have,
yeah.
His right-hand man and Saeed's character could have been, like, the same person.
Totally.
And I like the actor, not that the actor that played, then his sidekick's name is Jack or something like that, but point being, not that he was bad, but I, like, Saeed is just, like, he's not enough stuff. Mm. I was a big Lost person myself.
Yeah, I got excited when he popped up, for sure.
Yeah.
He never makes it stateside. That's sad. Dudes, so, the guy who plays the main poacher, Strasser, missing three fingers, embarrassingly, I guess, but I thought that was Viggo from John Wick for most of the movie.
Yeah.
You're just, you know, combining Eastern European accents and everything.
Well, I mean, like, he does look a lot alike with the beard, but he's actually the guy from Taken 2. So, I mean, I did see him in some sort of, like, action movie after all, but yeah, that was a shocker to me.
Yeah, he's a good bad guy. I feel like he's been a bad guy in like other things too. Like you just said, Taken 2. Oh, that's funny. I pulled up on like IMDb right now. It says Batman Begins. I'm like, Batman Begins. He's the guy that's like, he gives his coat to. You remember that like little joke?
In oh, the bum.
He's like, oh, nice coat.
That's weird that they got like a actor and not like a featured
actor. There are so many people in that trilogy though that are just like in a scene somewhere and just like, oh yeah, like he was in that. Like it's just, I'm not surprised by that. Do you know what I was surprised by? I don't know if either of you caught her. A cameo in the car that Joe picks up on his run down through downtown LA.
Yes.
Driving that car, Marguerite Moreau, aka Katie from Wet Hot American Summer. I was like, no way.
Oh.
Yeah. You know what's really funny? I was just rewatching First Day of Camp the past couple of days, and then I watched Mighty Joe Young yesterday, and so she was just like really fresh on my mind, and I'm like, wow, what a bit. You know, she's a team player. She was a 90s live action between the Mighty Ducks and everything like that.
Oh, that's right, she is a Disney contract, so this must have been
she's a team player.
Love it.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. I was super excited to see her. I was more excited to see her than the use of technology in this movie, where Charlize has a pager and she gets a page that says in all capital letters, Joe Trouble! ! They don't overuse technology in this movie, but I feel like that, I was just like, oh boy, like that's a rough one.
What, that like it literally spelled out Joe Trouble, you're saying?
It just said Joe Trouble. Yeah. Like that's like, you know, how we're conveying that. Like, hey, we've got this cool pager technology. Like, let's use this in our movie.
Yeah, and this is definitely in the window of new technology is coming out rapidly. Pagers, cell phones, the internet, late 90s. So every movie is going to get it wrong to some degree. Yeah. And it's always fun to track how wrong certain films are getting it along the way. And this one, like, I mean, a pager is not hard to get. You just do Joe 911.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That was just universal. I don't understand like how you get that wrong. It's crazy.
I'm surprised there's not like a hacking sequence in this movie, like the security, the security of
oh.
Like it just needs that, like, you know, oh, we're going to the mainframe and we're unlocking Joe's gate right now.
You know who I wanted to mention, because, and it's, I think it's especially fitting that Kyle's on this episode. There's like the two bumbling doofuses.
I love, yeah.
Oh, yep. One of them.
At the preserve.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Wait. Okay. So wait, I'm going to let you continue. So why is that? Because.
Oh, no. I know exactly why.
Because one of them looked exactly like Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, I could have sworn if he was a lesser actor, he would have been in this movie or something
definitely.
Around this time. This is around Twister era, right? Like, he probably got Twister and then didn't have to do this movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And they were probably like, we want a type like that guy in Twister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, no, those guys are got like characters after my own heart. Like, when they point to, like, when the Dr. Banks, played by Regina King, is just like, no, they look bad. That whole, like, dress sequence where she doesn't think she looks good or whatever. And they, like, point to those two guys, and the one guy's wearing a suit, but he's wearing Converse, and the other guy's wearing, like, a sloppy, like, sports coat and everything like that. Those are 110% characters after my own heart. You're totally right in saying that Philip Seymour Hoffman would have played, like, that character.
You know, I thought it was him a couple times. I'm like, no, wait, because we're past that in P.S. I Love Hoffman. Like, we would have gotten to this movie. Yeah, I mean, like, this is sort of like, it's a little bit after Twister, but it's sort of like Twister era, that same sort of, like, if he didn't have his breakout in Twister, I think, Mike, like, he would have been maybe, who knows, I don't know.
Yeah.
One thing I was really excited about in this movie and sort of proud of was we get a little bit of Fury Road-esque truck sequence stuff.
Yeah.
Where Charlize is taking out two guys in the truck and then like dangling off the door and like jumping out of the car and everything. I'm just like, this is 17 years from now. Not that she's, I mean, there's, everybody's doing crazy stuff in Fury Road, but like she's sort of setting this up like she can hold her own in these action sequences, and like,
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
No, it's really awesome. Like, I mean, this is a movie I've seen several times. Not that I've seen every modern Charlize Theron movie, but like, I've seen Fury Road, Atomic Blonde, and just like seeing her now versus, you know, 20 year later in her career, it's just like awesome to see like what she's now doing. And just like, again, she was, I mean, so you guys know better than me, but she grew up in Africa and she came over here, and this is the 8th film that she's been in.
Yep.
She's moving along. I mean, the 8th film, and she's, is this her first, what's her first leading role?
No, her first leading role was the 4th. So her first movie, she was a wordless extra, and then she was like a featured part of the cast in the second movie in 2 Days in the Valley.
Part of an ensemble.
And then she was a sort of a minor character in That Thing You Do, but in the Charlize cut, she was prominently featured.
Very featured. Enough. She's basically, supporting actress.
But then Hollywood Confidential, her fourth one, she's sort of still in an ensemble. But then, like, her fifth movie, Trial and Error, she is the female lead. Devil's Advocate, she's the female lead. Celebrity, she's... I mean, that's a Woody Allen movie, so there's no real lead other than Kenneth Branagh. And then here, she's the actual lead. So, I mean...
It's just really impressive this early in her career.
We were saying this on episodes that, like, haven't released yet, that you haven't been able to hear as we're recording this. But, like, it's amazing how quickly she went from being... Because it wasn't like she was Cage, where she had family members who sort of were able to... Not that people cast him because of Uncle Francis, but, like, the connection was known. Here, this was all her that, like, hit up that she was beautiful and that, you know, she had modeling and dancing experience and everything. And obviously from this movie, we learned that she can sing, too. But the fact that she goes from extra to, like, featured player to leading role in four movies or whatever is, like, remarkable.
Well, clearly, I mean, we're well aware now that she's incredibly talented, very versatile. But, I mean, she's undeniably gorgeous. She just has a great look. It's like it's besides her beauty. She just has, she just has a very classic Hollywood look, I think. So I think for a film like this that does follow, you know, as far as its weaker elements, it's a story we've seen before. I have not seen the original Mighty Joe Young. So when did that one come out again?
48, 49, I think.
Was it even that long ago?
Yeah, because Ray Harryhausen is in this movie.
Yeah.
He's a minor cameo. He's like a Stan Lee cameo.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Point being, just coming from, like, the, you know, the damsel in the distress, the blonde, she just has that, like, iconic look to her, too.
Yeah, I think it also helps that everybody in this movie is sort of elevating the material, which I like to see usually, you know, like, she's great, like, she's super talented, you know, that helps, like, she's not just, you know, I'm sure her beauty got her in the door, but, like, her talent kept her around, like, she built her house, basically, for other people to line up at her door. But then you got Paxton, you know, and, like, that guy is great in everything, he's so solid and talented also, and, you know, he directed a Disney film with Shia about golf at one point, so I guess that's his connection, hashtag all those movies. But yeah, I mean, she's remarkable and really works well in this role and is really selling it too. Like, she's just really genuine and I believe her. I believe, like, she's really from the jungle, I guess. I don't know. I believe she's convincing in everything that she does, and not everybody is.
Yeah.
And I think everyone in this movie is convincing, and that helps too. Like, they all are kind of hamming it up also to a degree.
Well, they're hamming it up to the Disney level, right?
Yeah, it's a certain style of acting. Right. I mean, it feels like a 50s movie at times, you know, where it's just, like, super safe.
Yeah, they're playing very much like, I mean, the tropes of those characters. I mean, you have your bad guy, then you have his, you know, sidekick to the bad guy that's bad, but then he won't do the baddest thing that the bad guy will do.
Yeah, yeah. Everything's very telegraphed and cartoonish and colorful.
And then you have, like, the nerdy, I don't even know if he's a doctor in it, but the one guy, actor's name is David Paymer.
Mm-hmm.
The one that's just, like, that has to play hide and seek with him.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He, like, runs the preserve.
Yeah, the nerdy boss that, you know, is playing by the rules, but then at the last minute, he's just like, no. It's Free Will. It's Free Willy, too. You know, it's just like that everyone's like, you know, like, oh, we're not going to help you, and then they help break him out.
So one thing that's sort of weird about this movie is that there were production delays a few times. There was one because of injury, and then it was intended for a summer release, and then it was released at Christmas. Like, this doesn't really feel, like, I understand that Disney movies can be Christmas movies. You know, like, just like the sort of the tone and the mood of them are like, hey, like, let's get the family together and go to the movie. But, like, this feels like a summer movie.
Yeah.
Not like a blockbuster movie, but it feels like a, because it's basically summer the entire movie. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like this is not the kind of movie.
It feels like August or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But one thing of note is that when this was released, I sent this to you guys, there was a minute and a half, I don't know why, a minute and a half short skating the half pipe, which I remember this. It's Goofy learning to rollerblade. It doesn't fit this at all, but I was really happy about that it was so short, as opposed to, as we're recording this, you know, a couple months ago, as you're listening to this, Coco came out with a 22-minute Frozen short before it. And it's just like,
crazy.
It's like, I'd rather have a minute and a half thing that's, like, kind of funny, but also ultimately, like, whatever, than a 22-minute thing where I'm beating my head against the goddamn seat in front of me because it's so terrible.
Yeah, thankfully they corrected all of that, and it's been yanked from print, and it's going to air on TV, the Disney short in front of Coco. When I saw, like, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids in theaters, there was, like, a Roger Rabbit short in front of it that was also just, like, 2 minutes or something. Like, yeah, it's kind of cool how Disney does that as a tradition, but usually there's some kind of, like, connection, I feel. Recently, anyway, maybe it's just because it's, like, Pixar with all of their, like, amazing shorts before their movies and everything.
But, and sometimes, like, the Pixar shorts do the thing better than the actual movie does. Like, they like they nail the theme in 8 minutes as opposed to like 100 minutes or whatever. I don't know why I always forget it, but I always, like, whenever I go to a Pixar movie, I'm like, oh right, there's a short before, and then that's why I was so disappointed by it. But, like, you know, you look back at, like, movies, like, there was a, I think it was one called Islands, right, where they're just like the islands that are in love with each other. I'm like, that was, like, so good. And then, like, here, like, you know, if I had seen Mighty Joe Young and I saw Goofy learning how to skate, I'd be like, all right, like, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, that was just a, I mean, that's a classic thing that's been happening, I feel like, since even the 30s.
Since movies, yeah, basically, since movies. Right? Like, yeah, like, Goofy was...
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like, even, like, Looney Tunes used to be before Warner Brothers stuff. Nowadays, I mean, I agree with you, Joey, in the sense that, like, I've seen some of the shorts, and they tend to, like, convey the message and their themes better in, like, a 6 to 8 minute thing versus the whole, you know, like, a long film like Up or WALL-E even, which are fantastic films. But I'm just saying some of these shorts have, like, really concise, great messages.
Any other thoughts about Mighty Joe Young that we want to talk about before we get into the recast game?
I mean, what did you guys think of the music? I mean, did you feel like, I mean, it was...
It's kind of like that... tribal, just in short term, it's like Lion King music almost, you know? It's just like, I like that stuff. I thought it was fine, you know? It just didn't really move me like it can sometimes. Like, I was watching Jumanji after this, and then I really felt the score in that.
Okay, well, same composer, so that's, I'm fine with that.
Okay, same composer, so yeah, I guess it's a sideways compliment. Yeah. So, was that before this? So maybe he sort of spent a lot of, you know, he was spent on Jumanji, didn't have a lot left over for this.
Well, it's funny, you know, like, I mean, I'll just go with, like, the most famous one of all time, like a John Williams. Like, you hear some of his stuff, but then you see another movie, and you're just like, oh, he's using a little bit, like, you know, there's similar themes and stuff like that. Like, there's this one, I feel like it's like a wooden flute, like whether it's a pan flute or a single, like, pipe flute or something like that, that he uses. One of my favorite movies of all time is Legends of the Fall, and he uses in that, and it's very, like, a Native American sounding instrument, but he uses it in this, and I'm like, holy shit, I think this is James Horner. And I looked it up. I'm like, all right. And then I like the way, again, she, like, sings the mom sings the lullaby, then Joe sings the lullaby, and the whole thing with the flashlights. It's just, they tied that into the score. So I really like it.
Cool.
I mean, I just wanted to mention one or two things quickly about the set pieces and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, not just Joe himself, which I think they pulled off really well, despite that wonky shot at the end that I didn't see, which is unfortunate. Like, his habitat felt to me like the King Kong ride when you go to, like, Universal Studios or something like that. Uh-huh. I thought that was kind of cool that it, like, you know, they were trying to make a point. They were saying he's not on display in, like, a dangerous environment, but he was clearly, you know, an attraction.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of, they were saying, you know, modern zoos should not be theme parks, which is weird because this is Disney and they do run, like, a big giant theme park and everything. So, but I mean, that's
they're saying, hey, zoos, stay out of our area.
Yeah.
Stay in your lane, zoos.
Busch Gardens, back away.
That stuff about her on the truck is awesome. Just the foreshadowing for Fury Road, I just have to say again, like, that's really cool. And, like, it just goes, like, they really go all out when it comes to the action. Like, they go, I feel like they go the extra mile for the effects, and when he's doing his little rampage downtown, it's a whole lot of fun. He's sitting on lots of cars, he's doing things, he's hitting buildings, he's tipping over stuff.
Oh yeah, him on top of the Chinese theater, like the Empire State Building, is amazing.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And I guess finally, just like, this has been coming up, and I just think it's pretty cool. Okay, so she's, like, from Africa in real life. She was a supermodel in real life, and she had, like, problems with her teeth in real life. And in her movie so far, she's been, like, heavily involved with a dentist in one movie.
Yep.
She played a supermodel in another movie.
Yep.
And she's from Africa in another movie.
Yep.
So, like, the movies are just, like, a reflection of her life. We're just watching her life, like, in real life. These aren't movies.
Do you wonder? I feel like we're probably too late in her career for this to happen, but I wonder if we're gonna have a movie where her mother kills her father, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like, I mean, probably not, but that's the other really big
she
thing
got
we
shot
know
in
her.
A movie she was shot in 2 days in the Valley, so that's a half covered.
Or maybe she'll be married to somebody and she'll kill her husband. Maybe that'll happen. time for Hollywood Tycoon, aka the recast game.
Ooh.
The rules of this game are simple. Each of us, we have five roles that we are recasting for this, plus a director. If we were remaking this movie today, who would we put in each of these roles? Who would we have direct the movie? There are only two real rules. Number one, cannot turn a female character into a male part, but you can do the opposite. And you cannot turn a non-white character into a white character, but you can do the opposite. The other rule, just because we like to make things extremely difficult for ourselves, is that Mike and I cannot cast people that we cast last week because they are off on location shooting their film and they are unavailable for Mighty Joe Young 2017, 2018.
There's one more rule you always forget, but I find it a hilarious rule, and you're the only one that sort of invoked it, is that you can cast fictional people, fictional characters, if you get like really stuck, Peter Venkman, whatever, you know what I'm saying? Or like you could go as far as to cast an inanimate object, like if instead of Clint Eastwood, you could recast him as like a chair if you felt like it. Ah. Or something.
Yes. So I wonder if you're saying that because you did something like that for this movie, but we will find out, I guess, very shortly on Hollywood Tycoon.
All right. So do I conduct this episode?
This is all you, baby.
All right. So Kyle, you'll go first. And sure. I guess we'll go from least to best today. And we'll start with sort of like the smaller characters. And okay. This guy, we'll go with Harry, the guy who is running the preserve.
Okay.
That like kind of small businessman.
I went with Sam Rockwell.
Ooh. Oh.
I think he brings, he can do wacky, we've seen him, I think he's a versatile actor and he's got some good comedic chops, but I want to see him he was speaking to the crowd and he had the cocktail sauce on him. I don't know, I just feel like he could be a good showman. It'd be a bit different, but yeah, I went with Sam Rockwell.
Cool. He could dance with Joe.
Exactly.
Contractually yeah. obligated to dance with the gorilla.
They do a young Frankenstein kind of thing, putting on the Ritz, you know.
Joey, who do you have?
I am going to do this one and the Regina King role, the Cecily Banks role, together because I cast them together. I don't know if either of you watched the show Shameless on Showtime.
Yes.
But Kevin and V, the next door neighbors, I think would be a perfect couple here. I mean, they're not together in this movie,
no.
But they're kind of at points sort of like a little comedic duo, and there's sort of a little bit of comedic relief in this movie. I think that they work really well together as a married couple on Shameless, and I think that they would be both great here. The actors are Steve Howey and Shanola Hampton. Steve Howey in that cocktail sauce scene would be sort of goofy.
Yeah, he's awesome.
The Regina King role, the part that she plays, there's nothing to it. Charlize is the lead of this movie, but the only other woman really of note has basically nothing to do, which is sort of a little disappointing, but
She's a doctor.
Yeah, at least she's a doctor, so at least her character has gone through med school or whatever. Yeah, so I think that they would be good together in those two parts.
I just kind of had one. I love Sam Rockwell, though, but right now, I can't get him out of my mind.
Oh, actually, Mike, before you answer, did you do your thing that you've been doing where you have one part and you go from there?
No, I didn't this time. Okay. Yeah, no, this time I didn't find sort of my core actor to base the rest of the cast around. Yeah, I did. I broke the tradition. This guy I thought of immediately. I was like, why didn't they just get him to begin with? I think it's the first time I'm setting him loose, and I have to go with the Tooch himself, Stanley Tucci.
I'm gonna set him loose. I knew it.
In that role, just because he's awesome, and I just, he would play it as never losing control, always trying to keep it, a straight face and everything, and instead of actually showing the control being lost and stuff, I just think it would be perfect fit for him.
Awesome.
All right, so I guess, Kyle, go with the Dr. Banks character, since we already got Joey's.
Oh, okay. I kept it as Regina King. I like her. I think she's still, I didn't want to do a recast on that. That was just I think she would still do just as good a job. I think, she's definitely had a lot more roles since then. So I think just as a veteran actress, I think she would even just go to the director and be like, no, we're making this role bigger. And it's going to become more relevant. It would be nice to carry over, and carry one character over. Or, I'm sorry, actress from one to the next movie.
We're not that far into Watch the Throne, but this is now 2 weeks in a row where the Hoffman guys are breaking all the rules. Last week, a spoiler, Kyle, Brian casts himself as the director of the film. And here you are keeping an actress from one film to the next. So two things, two firsts that have never been attempted so far here on Watch the Throne. You guys are breaking all sorts of new grounds.
Well, that's what we do on the P.S. I love Hoffman.
But I'm okay with it.
I love it. I never thought of that, just keeping the same actor in the roles. Pretty smart, yeah. Why fix what's not broken?
Yeah, it's a small role where she didn't get to do much. And again, I think she would just be like, nah, she's going to bring like a little something different this time around. And I think she would start adding lines or something. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely have to beef up this part.
Yeah.
I went with Leslie Jones.
For this part. Wait, so we got Stanley Tucci and Leslie Jones. All right.
Yeah, running the preserve, and she'd be Dr. Banks. I don't know what her duties are. I guess like drawing blood and doing tests, but, you know, I'd like to see her order around the two lackeys and then see them try and feed Joe. And, you know, you could definitely incorporate those characters a little more and maybe pull back on the romance.
Sure.
I guess next up is Strausser. I think that's how we pronounce it, right?
Strausser, yeah.
Yeah, the lead poacher.
The guy who misses fingers.
Kyle, who you got?
Can I say him with his sidekick? Is that okay? Because I feel like it was like a good comic.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, sure.
Oh, I didn't even cast a sidekick. I kicked him out of here because he's not in the movie that much, but go for it.
So as Strausser, I have Jason Statham.
Oh, I like it.
Oh my God.
As his like right-hand man, again, the character's name is Jack. That's how like little you know of him. The actor from Captain Phillips, Barkhad Abdi.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh.
What was he just in? He was just in another movie.
He was in Blade Runner.
That's
right.
Something
else.
Yeah. And I just want to add to that that I would combine that character with Saeed's character. So he would be there in the thing, and you wouldn't have that miscommunication. You'd have him calling up and like or whatever instead of, you know, that whole thing like, oh, you know, like Saeed was right or whatever Saeed's character's name was. But yeah, Jason Statham. So I threw that in for you guys with you know some
fast connection
coming down the road.
Yeah,
yeah.
Who do you have, Joe?
Oh boy, who did I put? Oh, okay. We honored this guy. We might have a match, Mike. I think we might have a match.
We do. Yes. I'm just saying it now. We have a match. It's the only thing I could think of.
We honored this guy last month on the Golden Hot Dogs, the Keanu Club Awards. If you need a villain of vaguely Eastern European descent, I don't know how you don't go with Peter Stormare. I mean, he's so good. I love Jason Statham. I think that I would rather see that movie. I'd rather see him in anything. But I think here, just for this, like, because it's not a huge part, but just like that villain, he's got the beard already. Like, it's got to be Peter Stormare.
Yeah, I had the same thing. And, you know, I just feel like he would sort of work in a family film a little more. He's like a little more goofy, a little less menacing than Statham. That guy would kind of like pump it up a little level of intensity. But Stormare was the only guy I could think of. Yeah, it just brought a big smile on my face too when I was thinking about it. Like, he would definitely pull this off really well.
It took until we got to Peter Stormare for us to match, but we finally did it, Mike.
Oh, that's right. This is the first time. It's a whole episode of firsts. First time Joey and I matched.
I've matched guests before, but Mike and I have never matched before, so pretty exciting. We might have to retire this game. We finally got our match. We are done. You're done recasting.
Okay. No.
And we're done.
All right, so I guess now is Greg with 3G.
Chris Evans.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, Captain America.
Captain America. I wanted it to get, like, a little closer in age, so it's not as creepy in that forefront if we keep, like, a romantic, you know, story going on. You'll see where I'm going a little bit, that I have, like, him and Jason Statham. So I'm just picturing that there could be maybe, like, a bit more physicality between some of these guys. Like, a little bit more conflict. Maybe we go back, they miss them in LA, and they have to go to Africa, and there's this crazy thing where all the animals at the end, and, like, he gets to ride Joe into battle.
That I would like to have seen, maybe. No one rode him, right? That would have been awesome.
I went with someone I think has similarities in terms of persona to Chris Evans. Mm-hmm. I went with a guy who I think could do this part really well. Kind of a sort of a captain. He's another captain, if you will. Nathan Fillion.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Captain Mal Reynolds from Firefly and Serenity. I just think that he's like that, you know, the handsome... I could see him as sort of like a modern-day... Because this guy is sort of like a poor man's modern-day Indiana Jones, sort of like,
yeah,
you know, like a Jurassic Park kind of thing. I think if they had to reboot... He's maybe too old now, but if they had to reboot Indiana Jones, I would think that he would probably be on the short list for that, and I think he could do this role pretty well.
Very cool. This was a tough one for these last two. I save for last because I'm still... It's a split decision at the end here for me, who I'm going to say, but I finally decided. But this was tough. Like, I was thinking this type is, like, around a lot. Like, there's, like, Chris Pratt in Jurassic World.
Yeah.
Reminds me of this character a lot and stuff. And ultimately, I went with one of his shipmates in Guardians. I went with Bradley Cooper for this role.
That's good, yeah.
He's got, like, that good amount of rugged Indiana Jones-ness and charisma and all that. And then if you were going to do the romance thing, I don't know, I feel like he be more of a romantic leading man than maybe Bill Paxton comes across.
Yeah. So we all went with like Marvel Space or Captains and
yep. And we could keep Marguerite Moreau in there and have a little bit of a Wet Hot American Summer reunion.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. DJ Ski Mask.
DJ Ski Mask.
Okay, so we're down to the last two here. I think we saved director for last. Yeah. We got Jill now.
Yes.
Charlize Theron herself.
Mike, I went with someone that we actually met many years ago. Saoirse Ronan.
Oh, dude, I was thinking of her. Yeah, met her at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Saoirse.
Is this Saoirse? I thought it was Saoirse.
It might be Saoirse. It's Saoirse or Saoirse. I just heard Greta Gerwig's WTF, and she said that she was saying it one way, and then they were on, it might have been Charlie Rose before Charlie Rose got canceled. Saoirse or Saoirse said her name the right way, the Irish way.
Yeah, the Gaelic way.
We didn't even try pronouncing her name when we interviewed her. Ronan or something.
Yeah, I interviewed her for Hannah. Her, Eric Bana, and Joe Wright. But yeah, I went with her. I thought that she definitely a great young actress and kept in, I guess, the blonde lady family. So there you go.
She's so good in Lady Bird. She's so good in Lady Bird. And she's so good in Brooklyn, too. Brooklyn made me cry a couple times. What this movie did to you, Brooklyn did to me.
Really?
Maybe if she was Brooklyn, in this movie, you would cry.
Ugh, Brooklyn.
I went with someone, again, Mike, this is another one, just like for The Devil's Advocate, the first time that she opened her mouth, I was like, that's Riley Keough. I saw one of the first things we see of Charlize in this movie is her running through the jungle. I'm hyped on this movie now because of you, but thinking of women running through the jungle, I gotta go with Alicia Vikander, the upcoming Lara Croft.
Yes.
And have her in this role. I mean, it's a different kind of role, but I think she could definitely absolutely play this. I just like her a lot.
I cast her in The Devil's Advocate as Keanu's stepsister. Remember that?
Yes,
yeah.
Christabella.
So I totally approve of that.
Christabella Andreoli.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Man, this was a tough one for me. I just couldn't really land on it until the end, but ultimately I just went with someone who I like to watch act and is always really good and could probably pull this off really well in a similar way. I want to see Mary Elizabeth Winstead do this part.
Ah.
I think that would be pretty cool with the rest of this cast.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that we haven't cast her yet.
Yeah, I don't know. This is the one, I'm always at least one where I was like kind of hesitant about and I'm not sure, and this is the one this week, but I'm sticking with it and I like to see that. I don't know. Maybe it's just I want to see her in like one of these Godzilla movies, or maybe, you know, she did like that Cloverfield movie, so I think of her as open to doing a role like this or being in like a Kong film or something like that. So that was my reasoning.
I dig it.
All right, guys, the final category is director. So Kyle, who do you got?
All right, mine's a kind of a bland choice. I chose it.
I hope you pick Brian Rodriguez.
Yes, Brian Rodriguez, he's such a bland choice. No, I decided to go with a Disney live-action company man director. I went with Gore Verbinski. He did a lot of the Pirates of the Caribbean. I mean, he does a fine job with the CGI live-action, like, adventure films. So figured why not give him a shot.
Nice. I like it. I could definitely see his aesthetic applied to this type of film with, like, the fantastical elements.
I went with another director whose first name is also a common noun. Someone who recently did a kaiju film and did it very, very well. The movie was about more than just that. It was about a character study of the leading lady. I went with Nacho Vigalondo, Austin's own Nacho Vigalondo.
Nice.
I think he could do he's done a couple movies, not similar to this, but similar enough that I think he could do a movie like this. I kind of want to see like what Nacho would do for like a Disney movie. I appreciate how weird he gets, but I think that he could bring the sort of specific, the type of magic and stuff that he brought to Colossal, he could bring to this maybe. So I want to see Nacho do a movie like this.
It's funny, like, his movies are so light, but they feel like lighthearted films, but then they just are all very dark, you know? like, they're very, very dark comedies, and they work really well in that regard. I'd love to see him do an actual lighthearted family film. That's a really cool choice. This is crazy that we were talking so much about, like, Fury Road and Mad Max and all that kind of stuff, because I picked George Miller for an entirely different reason, which is Babe and Babe Pig in the City, and the Penguin movie.
And Happy Feet,
but mostly for the Babe films. I just think George Miller with this material would definitely knock it out of the park. You don't really have to do all that much more, I guess. Like, this movie feels like it pleased the committee on, like, all of the levels. I think George Miller might be able to find some room to take it in some place you might not expect, or some place that just makes it feel like Joey hasn't seen it before, you know, like just in the sense that like this isn't familiar or anything like that. So yeah. I went with George Miller.
I was thinking at one point Taika Waititi.
Oh yeah, well it's funny, I mean like all that Hulk talk and stuff, like yeah, I could definitely see all of that.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, I think that wraps up Hollywood Tycoon.
Sure does. Now before we wrap up the episode, let's talk about the Watch the Throne Awards, the Golden Wallpapers, or better named To Be Determined. I already said that I think we should submit this for Best Love Story between Jill and Joe. Do either of you think there's anything else good or bad enough about this movie to nominate it for any award that either exists or that we could make up to specifically honor this film?
Again, I'll go with I really enjoyed the music, but then also I enjoyed the... I think there were some good chase sequences, but just knowing what's coming down the line for her and stuff like that. With Mad Max, it doesn't compare with the maybe also worst love story between her and Bill Paxton.
Oh, yeah. That's okay.
Well, so for worst love story, would we have like her and Keanu from Devil's Advocate? Like, is that
one? Yeah,
because I mean, he's pretty.
That's right.
Pretty abusive too. So I guess we could do worst love story. Okay, let's see here. Okay, so under best love story, we're gonna do worst love story. I mean, she's been in so many bad... Oh, no. Like, we already have a full category there. Like, we have her and... What's-his-face in 2 Days in the Valley is terrible. We have her and Keanu in Devil's Advocate is terrible. We have her in this is terrible. It's a big category, I think.
I like it. All right. It's only from what we've seen so far, so, like, stuff will be put on and taken off as we go along. So, whatever we have for now.
Like I said, it reminded me of, like, Lost World, like, their little chase sequences. And as soon as I said that, I was just like... You asshole. Fury Road's coming out.
That's the thing. Like, we can't... Like, we're doing the same thing over on Magic Mike's. Basically, for Magic Mike's, we need to have a song that can compete with Pony. And if a song is not going to beat Pony in, like, the awards at the end, like, it shouldn't even be nominated. If we're going to do Best Chase Sequence, like, something needs to be on par with Fury Road, which, oh, by the way, is, like, the best chase sequence in the history of movies.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if I want to... Like, I love that idea. I love recognizing this for that, but that it's gonna be like a 90% vote for, like, I don't know that Mike and I would pick anything else other than that. So
yeah,
right, yeah, even if it came down to like best action sequence or something, you know, that's even then is hard.
Best bad guy death, I don't know, is that a category?
Well, I was gonna say best death in general, but we already have like best Charlize death. We could maybe start a best death not Charlize or something, or best villain.
Yeah, best villain.
He's a pretty good villain.
All right, let's see here.
I was trying to think of a way to integrate the music. If we didn't do best song this time but just did best music, we could nominate the movie instead of a particular song. But then if there was a song, we could just nominate the movie.
Yeah, best score. I don't know.
Well, we can have separate categories. Yeah. For best death, we have Raid Sarbaja as Strasser, electrocuted, Maisha Young. Mike, are there any other deaths from any of the other movies that we've done so far that we should nominate for I just have it right now as best non-Charlize death.
I mean, I'm sure there's a great Korn death somewhere in Children of the Korn 3.
If we don't remember it already, like, was it worth... I mean, should we have Keanu's, spoiler alert, suicide from The Devil's Advocate?
What?
I mean, that is a pretty good one.
All right, let's see here. Keanu Reeves' suicide in The Devil's Advocate. So then we have best song. Oh, that thing you do is on there. So best score / soundtrack. We have Mighty Joe Young. All right. The other thing was worst love story. If we're going to go back. Well, actually, okay, so hold on. So best score soundtrack. Are there other movies that we've done, Mike, that we should nominate for that category?
Well, I mean, that thing you do probably. All right. Only, at this point. Devil's Advocate, I wouldn't say because it's...
Show me your tattoo.
Exactly. Like, that's in there.
But okay,
that's
so the other, going back for a second to worst love story, we should do...
Okay.
Oh, God. We got to do Celebrity. We got to do Lee and Supermodel. So even though it's not really a love story. Trial and Error is bad, but not as bad. Hollywood Confidential is just where I have something.
At least they're portrayed to be in a loving relationship with each other.
The dentist in That Thing You Do is okay.
They end up together. Yeah, they're happy. They're superficial people.
I think the other one we got to do is 2 Days in the Valley.
Oh.
What's his name from Sex Lies?
Yeah, he puts her out of her misery. She's like dying and he kills her.
Why can't I pull his name?
Spader. James Spader.
Yeah. His name is Lee, too. Man, she should just not date Lees in movies. Wow. Lee and Helga, 2 Days in the Valley. All right. Going back through this real quick, we have four categories nominated. We have
best love story, worst love story, best non-Charlize death, and best score/soundtrack. I think that's pretty good.
Boom.
I think it's pretty solid.
Sounds good.
So I hope that adequately reflects how much you like this movie, Kyle.
Yeah.
We appreciate you being on. I'm glad that we had somebody who really loved this.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm indifferent enough and Mike likes it, but it's relatively indifferent enough that if we didn't have somebody on here who was really passionate about it, it might have been a shorter episode. So I'm glad you were on. I'm glad we finally corrected our mistake of not having you on, and we're looking forward to having you on more Cage Club crossover episodes in the future.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on, and I'm glad I've been on P.S. I Love Hoffman plenty of times and are going to be on it again soon. So I don't know exactly when this episode's going to be released.
This episode comes out January 19th, which maybe by this point we would have canceled P.S. I Love Hoffman. I mean, we joke about it every time we're on that show. Any minute now, any day now, we might pull the plug on your show.
Yeah, just do it. Yeah. That's cool.
But no, yes, Mike and I will both be back on your show in the near future. I'm not sure if you're coming back for anything here, but we have so many other things in the works that you will be on stuff that we do in the not so distant future. I'm sure of it.
Awesome. Always, I appreciate it. Thank you guys for your friendship and mentorship.
Aw. One other thing I want to say is that we do have an email address for the show. It is watch@cageclub.me. You can let us know what you think of Mighty Joe Young. You can let us know what you think of this recast of the Hollywood Tycoon game as a whole. Anything you want to let us know, watch@cageclub.me. And you can go to cageclub.me for all the episodes of this show, all the episodes of Kyle's show. I would like to plug one podcast. We'd plug a podcast at the end of every episode. I would like to plug Monkey Club, I think is probably appropriate. Right, Mike? That
oh,
we
yeah.
have here well, for,
yeah, go for it.
A movie about monkeys. We had a short-lived 10-episode run of Monkey Club back at the beginning of Phase 2 of Cage Club Podcast Network. When Mike and I launched Keanu Club and Joe 2 and I launched Zack Attack, Monkey Club was right there with us. Mike and I were both on episodes, and I miss Monkey Club.
Yeah, me too. Hashtag bring back Monkey Club.
Hashtag bring back Monkey Club. There are rumblings. I don't think it's going to happen, but there are rumblings that Monkey Club could come back. As long as I don't have to ever watch Shockma again, I think I will be okay with that coming
back. Have to watch it that one time and you're cool with that? No.
Oh, God, it's so bad. But yeah, so go to cageclub.me, check out all the episodes of this show, P.S. Love Hoffman, Monkey Club, and all of our other good shows on the network. You can go to facebook.com/cageclub or @cageclubpod on Twitter to stay up with the latest and greatest of what we have to offer. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play, and Stitcher. Anywhere you want to interact with us, feel free to go ahead and once again watch@cageclub.me. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Kyle Ryan for you. And we'll see you next time on Watch the Throne.